The following program does not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WFMD.
It's Success Happens on 930 WFMD, blending business and politics. Success Happens with your host, Jen Charlton.
Good morning and welcome to Success Happens. It's so great to be with you all. And I have to tell you, what a week. And we keep saying that. And each week it seems to get, worse. This was a rough week. This was a really, really rough week. And I want to start by saying my prayers and my thoughts are with the families of those who passed on Wednesday as a result of all that we're dealing with as a nation. And I remember saying to my friend, we were down there, I went down there, and I wanted to see for myself the people. And I was struck by calm excitement, you know, people unified for something, right? Standing for their country. But I said to my friend, I said, let's not get famous by getting debt. Okay, we knew it could be dangerous. We knew that we had to get out of there by 4 o'clock. And we did. We were loading on that metro at 4 o'clock with a whole bunch of other patriots. And I want to say that I am so sorry for what happened to those four individuals and the impact on their families and their friends and their loved ones. It is so tragic that it came to this. There is a lot of stuff being said. And I think if there's anything I've gotten super clear about is something that I learned recently in one of the podcasts. It was actually a religious podcast. It was be mindful, essentially. I'm going to paraphrase it. Be mindful of what you hear. And don't trust everything that you hear. You really have to sort it out right now, guys. And one of the things we try to do here is be truthful. Now, it's my truth, and hopefully it's your truth. Hopefully you listen because it's your truth. But we have to really be mindful of what we're listening to. The main street media is not telling the truth. Or perhaps sometimes they are. We're going to play some of that, you know, like really, what is the truth? You got to look for it. In mainstream media, sometimes you got to dig deep to find the truth within what is said. But let us remember that the anti-Trumpers and the Lincoln Project and the people who were against this president the moment he took office and even before, and they started impeachment on bogus nonsense. And here we are at the end of all this saying, here we go again. They are talking about impeaching him on Monday. And I want to tell you, you heard it here. Because I've said the next thing they're going to do is try and impeach him again, particularly if we don't win the Senate. And they knew that. So there's a lot of stuff out there. You got to sort it out. Take a breath. Be patient. And have God on our side. Because right now, all we have is hope and prayer for truth and light. So I thought, what a great way to bring together all of that and start with a friend who I don't know if he's called in yet, Pastor Paul Mundy. And when Paul comes in, I want to just share from a perspective of you know, what is God's will? We have a great guest today from Heritage Foundation. And Heritage Foundation has become an amazing, I'll say partner in the sense that they really have provided us with experts who give us information that is being distracted because I think Paul's on the line. information that is from an expert's point of view. So it's not me. You know, I'm not an expert on a lot of this stuff. I'm just a talking head. So right now I want to bring Pastor Paul on. Please join us in welcoming Paul Mundy, who I've known for years and admire greatly. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Jen. Good to be with you.
Thank you. Good to be with you. And I was just, I don't know if you heard my preamble, but, you know, I want to have, you know, we want to create the sense of hope. And God gives us that. And I thought just if you would take a minute or two and provide some hope and light for people who right now are suffering in the struggle that we're in as a nation.
Yes. Well, I've been influenced by any number of voices. One commentator has been very helpful to me is John Meacham. And what John Meacham basically has reminded us is that division and conflict has always been a part of our democracy. So division and conflict is not something to fear or necessarily see as that which we need to somehow avoid. But the way we act in the midst of the division, the conflict, is what is absolutely essential. And what John Meacham is saying is the foundation of our democracy is empathy, which means we need to understand each other at levels that we normally don't go to. In other words, we tend to go on the basis of assumptions or appearances. And we need to realize as we do understand each other, we all need each other. No matter where we are politically or theologically or in terms of our philosophies in that way. So I've been having a major emphasis on empathy, and related to that in terms of a scripture that I was thinking of this morning from 1 Peter 3:8-11, a tremendous emphasis on humility and compassion as well. So Jen, that's where I would begin.
I love that. You know, that so resonates with me. You know, I like to think that I am humble, not always, but, you know, I try to be. Maybe that's one of my moments when I'm not, because I'm bragging. But, you know, the point being that, you know, this notion of empathy, it goes all around. It must go in 360, right? We have to all embrace empathy. And that means I'm going to say something now. I've got you on the phone, so I'll insert it here. Not necessarily appropriate, but I got a really tough message from somebody who walked into my place of business and left words that I can't say on air because I'll be sanctioned on a note with a staff member at my place of business calling me, ready for this, a racist, and a F in this and an F in that. It was so ugly that I'm contemplating putting in a police report. So when people have that level of nasty, how do you talk to them, Paul, about finding compassion and empathy?
Well, it's incredibly a struggle, and what it begins with, I believe, with each of us modeling what the proper response needs to be in terms of the alternative. Over the holidays, I reviewed the great movie Gandhi from years ago, and Gandhi, you know, had this incredible ability of not returning evil for evil. In a more contemporary way, Martin Luther King, of course, is that model of nonviolence. And both Gandhi and King were incredibly criticized for being naive. I mean, my goodness, we've got to return evil for evil, not for not, you know, an eye for an eye, et cetera, et cetera. But someone's got to break this cycle because it's just going to keep intensifying. And it's going to keep becoming violent on both sides. And we're not trying to take a political view here. I'm just simply saying the violence will escalate all across the theological and the political spectrum if someone doesn't break the cycle like a Martin Luther King or a Gandhi and say we simply are not going to go there anymore in terms of returning ought for ought, evil for evil, eye for eye.
Well, in all fairness, the president did say that. In his second comments, he said, we are peaceful. Lawbreakers will be held to account. This is not how we roll. you know? So he did say that, and yet people refuse to accept that. So part of it is, if someone says something, you got to kind of like take it for what it is, right? But, you know, this other notion I want to deal with is that a lot of this violence is an insertion of inauthentic people pretending to be something that are there to rile and defile our nation. So you look at this Antifa and BLM, I know they were there because I saw them. So we have to deal as a nation with starting to deal with truth and authenticity. And like you're saying, love and compassion and God's will. So
yes, absolutely. And I think what I'm calling for is that obviously this has gone far too far, and all of us have not modeled this earlier in the process. So it's not a matter of whether the words have been said or not said. I think the general critique is that all of us could have said much more earlier in this process before things becoming so inflamed. And I'm not just talking about the incident this week. We've had, hot, amped rhetoric, and other expressions, you know, of what I would call the extreme now for some time, for months and months and months and months. And so I think the lesson from all this is that we need to begin far earlier in terms of just pressing the pause button, taking a breath, and entering into the realm of empathy and compassion and humility, not surrendering our convictions and our opinions, but realizing that my opinion and my conviction is not the only conviction. The person who I would consider, for example, my theological or my political enemy, also has a conviction and an opinion I need to listen to. And frankly, I'll be radical enough to say I need to learn from my enemy. And be that humble to realize that that person has something to contribute as well.
Well,
let me
just insert there, because I know this may be a place where we disagree a bit, because I think at some point we have to stand up against evil and say, now we've had enough. And for me and you, a lot of that happens in prayer, right? And those loving thoughts that we exude to our Creator and others. But I am at the point now, and I don't know how we bring it back, Paul. I hear what you're saying, and I'd love for you to continue this conversation with us on future shows, because it is going to take us having that empathy. But there's also a stand here. There's a stand that must be like truth and light and God's
yes.
will. Go ahead. Just final words.
Yeah,
please.
And that's why I lift up models such as Martin Luther King and Gandhi. There was no doubt of their conviction and needing to take a stand. And in the case of Martin Luther King, of course, it was a call for justice in new ways. But the methodology was of nonviolence and of compassion and of humility. And I'm simply saying that across the theological and the political spectrum, there is a waning of commitment to more of another way of living, a more nonviolent way of standing up for our convictions and confronting persons, but confronting people in a way that respects and has decency at the center of it all. And again, when I'm saying that, I'm not making a political statement. All aspects of the theological and, frankly, the political spectrum really exhibit, a less than honorable behavior in this regard. So we're not trying to make a political stand
here.
I'm just simply saying our entire culture and society has now reverted back to this more of this violent rhetoric and violent action. I come from a peace church, a peace position. And we are very much committed to another way of living, you know, to a stance of nonviolence. And like Martin Luther King or Gandhi, it looks naive, but in reality, it breaks the cycle.
Well, let me just—we're going to have to move on. And I just so appreciate you and love you dearly, and thank you so much. I do want to say that there was a situation with Sodom and Gomorrah, where they came in and they wiped out the town because it got so bad. So, you know, sometimes even the Bible says, you know what, enough is enough. Paul, I love you. We'll talk soon. God bless you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Okay. And we just keep looking to the ethic of Jesus and the Sermon on the Mount, and God will lead us through the eyes of Christ.
Beautiful. Thank you, Paul. God bless you. Thank you. Wow. So, you know, we're going to take a quick break, you guys. I want to come right back with a gentleman I met at the march on Wednesday who is actually from Romania. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Dave Dionovich, owner of Dionovich & Associates, a global security company. We offer top security professionals with vast law enforcement and military experience on rapid deployment to protect property and lives. With the current climate in our communities, we continue to deal with widespread protesting that can turn violent. Our team is available to protect you, your family, your business, regardless of the coverage you need. Call us at 866-476-1703, or you can visit us at DEANOVICH.com. Our mission is your survival.
Happy weekend!
It's a free talk weekend on 930 WFMD.
Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jen. Wow, what a rock'em sock'em show. And that was just Paul Mundy. And he's with the Church of the Brethren. And I got to know him through the Frederick Church of the Brethren, where he retired from. Okay, now listen. I want to bring on Nikolai. And Nikolai and I became friends on Wednesday at the march. And I was just happened to be having lunch. We stopped for a minute. And apparently we stopped long enough because that's when all the break-in occurred at the Capitol. So we were having lunch and I met Nikolai. Good morning. Welcome to Success Happens.
Good morning, Jen. Thank you for having me.
Yes, it's wonderful. And Nikolai, we have just a few minutes for people to hear your story. And I asked you, you know, when we started talking and I heard your accent, I thought, well, why are you here? So will you please tell people where you're from, where you live now, and why were you in Washington on Wednesday?
All right. So I'm going to introduce myself a little bit. My name is Nikolai. I live in Michigan, and I'm originally from Romania. I decided to join this fight because in the past years, you know, I really started to realize what's going on in this country. And I decided to join this fight along with other patriots and obviously Donald Trump, which, in my opinion, it's an amazing, amazing president. In my opinion, we were heading in a wrong direction, and we had to make a stand, you know. We had to do something about it, you know. Like you said earlier, enough is enough. You know, we're not going towards communism, you know. Like I told you on Wednesday, I'm coming from a ex-communist country, and I know what is all that about. And trust me, guys, we don't want to go there. We don't want to go
there.
Tell
them what it was like when you were young, growing up in a communist country.
Well, it's pretty much exactly what the far left are pushing right now in this country. You know, a lot of censorship. You know, people were living in fear. You know, you cannot say anything bad about the system. There were food shortages. And as a matter of fact, it's happening today in China and Venezuela. People just don't know much about it because the mainstream media don't want to talk about it. And the life was tough. The life was really, really tough back then.
In what way? So you had to find, did you experience having a shortage of food?
Oh yes, people had to stay in line for bread. This is how bad it was.
That's shocking. I mean,
yes.
You're talking here in the United States of America that we're already experiencing the things that you lived in communism, and we know it occurs in China. Because I've experienced trying to get somebody to talk to me from Beijing, they can't. So in this notion that communism is this thing out there somewhere that we may end up in? It sounds like to me we're already there.
Right, and look.
I mean, it may just be, let me say this, Nikolai, it may be within the last few months it came to our doorstep and we walked through.
Look at the censorship that's happening right now. Just look at it. This tells you everything. This is not to protect you or anyone else. It's just to shut you off and keep the truth, you know, on the side so people don't hear it. This is really bad. We cannot allow this to happen.
Did, you know, when you look at an insurrection, when you look at the notion of trying to alter a democracy to communism, and we say, all right, we're already experiencing some elements of that right now. We've lost our power. It used to be we the people. That's what we were founded on. We the people. Not so much. We don't have any power now. They just shut down Twitter. I know a girlfriend of mine's been censored. I've been censored somewhat. I try to walk that tightrope. But Trump lost his Twitter and Facebook account. The president of the United States has been shut down by high tech.
To be honest, I couldn't believe it when I saw it happen. I couldn't believe it. To think that Mark Zuckerberg or Jack Dorsey has more power, you know, in this country than the United States president, that's appalling. That's shocking to me.
Well, and I will also say this. It used to be that we respected the individual in the office. We respected the office, which I think that's gone. But we also respected the individual who held the office. But I think that we have seen this decline coming for the last 8-10 years. And some people would say it's been a couple decades in the making when you look at the positioning of judiciary has declined and has become a part of, we're going to call it the cabal, but, you know, this whole thing. So any thoughts about that? I don't want to take away your time. Go ahead.
Yes. I would like to say that, you know, 4 years ago, I got my citizenship, and this is how I got to know the Constitution of the United States. And let me say this. The U.S. Constitution is one of the most important and the strongest constitutions on the planet right now. The thing is that wrong people got into the office and they don't obey the Constitution no more. This is the problem. They go around it. They don't care about it. They really act like communist people at this point. And this is really bad.
All right, I want to play a clip. So hold this. This is one of our illustrious leaders. Let's just listen to this as we go to break. And Nikolai,
well,
hold the line.
We have our options. We have arrows in our quiver that I'm not about to discuss right now. But the fact is, we have a big challenge in our country. This president has threatened to not even accept the results of the election with statements that he and his henchmen have made. So right now, our main goal, and I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg would want that to be, would be to protect the integrity of the election as we protect the American people from the coronavirus. And I have faith in the American people on this Sunday morning. I hope and pray we have a vaccine and that it will be soon, but it must be safe and efficacious when we do. Not one day sooner, not one day later than that. But the fact is, this administration has been a total failure in protecting the health and well-being of the American people, and it has had an impact on our economy. The lives, the livelihood, and the life of our democracy are threatened by this administration. So, again,
So that was our House Leader Pelosi during the during coverage of the passing of Bader Ginsburg. And arrows in the quiver, I don't think, was limited to that instance. So we're going to play one more clip because she closes this interview with this.
We have a responsibility. We take an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. We have a responsibility to meet the needs of the American people. When we weigh the equities, protecting our democracy requires us to use every arrow in our quiver.
So, every arrow in our quiver, ponder that. Ponder what that looks like when she ripped up the president's speech in front of the world. She defiled,
gosh.
Right? Any thoughts about that?
Well, I think everyone that, you know, that thinks for themselves a little bit knows that everything that she says is just lies and lies and lies. No decent man or woman would believe her at this point, you know. It's appalling to me. It's sad. It's sad. I don't know how we got to have these politicians in the office, to be honest. I mean, we saw what happened with the election in 2020, so I'm not surprised at all. You know, everything is fixed, you know, and I'm not surprised at all.
Well, Nikolai, I would love to have you back. I thank you so much for taking a few minutes away from your family in Michigan. God bless you. We will keep in touch, and I appreciate that you bring this perspective to all of us and remind us that we are a melting pot nation and people come from all of the, around the world to bring their experiences. And you came here for I'm assuming a better future than what you had, perhaps. So I thank you. I got to leave it there. We will be back in touch. God bless you. And thank you. Everyone, you're listening to Success Happens. We're going to take a quick break for news and weather. We'll be right back.
Past editions of this program are available in the audio vault at WFMD.com.
Good morning. Welcome back, everyone. This is Success Happens. And wow, you know, listening to Nikolai's story, I think, should really wake us up to something. And I just said to my team here, you know, the fact that we are in the middle of this transformation, and it isn't a good one. You know, transformation can take many different flavors. Okay, there's good transformation and there's bad transformation. We are in a transformation and it ain't good. And we have to preserve and protect our nation from becoming that which Nikolai said, I don't want to be a part of, you know, and of course they had become out of communism, but you know, there's a whole aftermath, right? You know, when Russia shifted, listen, they still are dealing with economic issues. So I want to bring to the show and invite him, and we're going to do what we can to cover everything with him in the short time that we have, is Dr. Lee Edwards with the Heritage Foundation, who is an expert on communism, conservatism, and all things related to our republic from that perspective. And good morning and welcome to Success Happens.
Well, good morning, Jennifer, and thanks so much for inviting me to be with you this morning.
You're welcome. And I know that this is a challenging time, and we are so grateful to the Heritage Foundation for making you available and you finding time in your weekend for us. Can you start with help us understand where we are today, before we go to today, the distinction of conservatism versus communism, so we can understand it based on what Nikolai just presented.
Well, the founder of communism was a Russian named Vladimir Lenin, and he promised, and the other Bolsheviks at the time, way back at the beginning of the last century, peace, land, and bread. Peace, land, and bread. And that's something that Nikolai was talking about. But what the Bolsheviks delivered was bread lines, not bread, but bread lines. Not peace, but the gulag, a system of forced labor camps in which millions were incarcerated, and the KGB, secret police. and a command economy, resulting in the famine of millions and millions of Russians and other nationalities. So I think what we have to keep in mind is that communism is based upon lies, based upon falsehoods. And contrary to that, we have, of course, free enterprise and free choice in this country for the most part. And we're so fortunate that we have that. And I think we have to say, Jennifer, that in this crisis, and we're in a crisis, and I agree with you, that conservatives have a special role to play at this time and place. It really is. To what? To preserve and protect the priceless principle of ordered liberty. And that's a difficult challenge, ordered liberty. What is the right balance between order and liberty? But you have to have both. If you have too much of one or the other, you're going to have chaos and anarchy, and that's not something we want. So conservatives, believing as we do at the Heritage Foundation, in a limited constitutional place for government, say that ordered liberty and the right balance between those two things is absolutely all important at this time.
So when we look at, would you agree with what I said? Because it was a pretty bold statement that we may be in the middle of this transformation to something not good called communism.
Well, I think we're on the way to socialism. Yes, with a extraordinary new powers and authority for the government. And that's one of the things that at Heritage we're concerned about, is this new administration, the Biden administration. And if AOC and her compatriots there in the squad bring about the Green New Deal and bring about new taxes, bring about lessened border controls, these are all dangers which can lead us toward socialism. And that's something that we must resist with all that we have. And that's something that the conservative movement led by Heritage is going to do.
Okay, now, what is the, on a sliding scale, from conservative to socialism to communism, how far apart are socialism and communism? Because I'm not seeing much of a distinction right now.
Well, socialism, theoretically, is on the way to communism. It's a stage on the way to it. So with our entitlements, we have millennials saying that, well, 70% of them would be happy to vote for a socialist or to live under socialism. They don't know what socialism really is. So that is another thing that you and I and everyone else has to do, and that is to make sure that people understand what socialism would do to our liberties and would do to our freedoms.
And think about it, though. And this is something people have been outcrying for years. And to be honest with you, I kind of said, oh, come on, is it really that bad in the school systems that we're educating kids that socialism may be our answer?
Well, of course, this is what there's a very infamous history book written by Professor Zim. And there have been hundreds and thousands of copies of which have been distributed, which are being used in our high schools and in some colleges as well. And this is this vision that America, you know, is racist, is built upon elites. And of course, that's not true at all. That is not what the founders were all about. They were all about, as you said earlier, Jennifer, we the people determining what our government should be.
And this is so much bigger than one man. I mean, to pin all this on Trump is just, in my view, crazy. The Constitution is bigger than a man, and yet they're making this man synonymous with our Constitution or something. It's just really wonky right now.
Well, that's why it was so important. Mr. Trump, of course, is quite a controversial character and figure. But one of the things that he did that needs to be absolutely praised for, and that is those three justices to the Supreme Court who were nominated and who were passed by the Senate. So that was an extraordinarily important and will have an influence on our society and is a check and a balance against if it were not for the Constitution, it would be possible to do much worse than what we've just been going through.
So when we look at what happened this Wednesday, and just to, I want to frame it up with, there have been riots, burning downs of buildings in Seattle, Portland, the excessive deaths in both Chicago and Baltimore by thugs. So these people have been burning the house down, so to speak, all 2020 almost. I mean, and before. So in the last number of years, we've been dealing with that. But then they try to say that this one incident, now I was there, it was peaceful. People were there for a purpose. They were there for a passion, and they were there for patriotism. And when I stood among those people, I wept because I knew they cared about our country. And we talked to people who were former military, who served. I actually talked to a gentleman who had gotten into the rotunda and took video and then left when they threw the tear gas and all of that stuff. So at what point are we, so it's okay for them to burn the house down, but it's not okay for us to stand up and say, wait, we love our country and we're standing for free and fair elections. How do we reconcile that?
Well, I think you have to make this, Jennifer, have to make distinctions between peaceful assembly, which is what was going on at the Ellipse in Washington with speeches and so forth. And then if you have that resulting in some people determining that therefore they could storm the U.S. Capitol, that they could push and shove the police and others as well who are trying to establish order, there is a very definite difference between that. And that's something that can't be allowed. That is where you go outside lawful assembly into something which is unlawful action and which cannot be condoned.
Of course. Now, I want to say this, though. There is video of the police moving the barricades aside. I have a video of a guy ushering them in, waving his hand, come on, come on, come on, in police uniform, inviting them into the Capitol. I have another video where they step aside and say, you know, we're not condoning this, but they literally open the doors and let them in. They didn't resist whatsoever. I think they actually wanted this. Now, there is, and that's a bold statement. That's a really bold statement. But I did not see in those videos where they were in any way trying to establish a barrier and maintain it. They took the barrier away and allowed them in. Now, there is something called infiltration, and there is a question as to whether those people, so on the road, we're talking about on the road to communism, okay, is there a notion where people pretend to be some way in order to inflict the transition and change that is going to occur to bring about their ultimate goal called communism?
Well, of course, that's possible. That's a possible scenario, and certainly there have been foreign agents from enemies in the past, whether it was the Soviet Union, which put spies here in our government back in the 30s and the 40s. We know that China is using all kinds of means to infiltrate, to use your word, our system, to take advantage of through intellectual theft, through planting people in various companies trying to get material which they can use for their purposes, particularly in the high-tech field. All of that is true. But I think before we rush to judgment, and we have to see what really what the totality of the evidence is about what happened here last Wednesday. Like you, I've been trying to figure it out. There's so much information which is flowing right now. I think we have to be very careful about jumping to conclusions. I'm an historian, not a political consultant, so I tend to take time to look, to consider, to reflect upon what I see and what I'm presented with before I rush to judgment.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that perspective, because I think that history tells us much, because this has happened before. And apparently it's trying, I believe they're trying to do it again. So let me just say this. There were many acts of kindness all over the city. We experienced a woman, a friend of ours who's handicapped, and she had somebody just start helping her and helping her. She was in pain, so massaged her leg to help her. Another guy was crouched down. He was having trouble. His circulation was bothering him. A woman behind him gave him a stool to sit upon. We were thirsty. A man gave us a drink. You know, a man pushing a wheelchair, we helped him. He had dropped his blanket. You know, there were acts of kindness all over the city amongst us. So I think it's important to remember that there were millions of people there who were fighting for something peacefully.
Absolutely. And as I say, that kind of peaceful assembly is American as apple pie, no question about it. And it seems you know, speaking now, you know, on behalf of Heritage, what we're trying to do and what we're going to be seeking to do this year is to get people to come together. First, you know, fellow conservatives and so forth, and then reaching out beyond that. And we really have to start a dialogue, it seems to me. We have to stop, you know, talking past each other and over each other and through each other and start talking with each other. It's not easy, but it seems to me that here is an opportunity that we have. And your guest earlier, the pastor, talking about Martin Luther King and Gandhi, both of them believed in this idea of dialogue between differing points and opposing points of view. We've got to break down, it seems to me, and get through this reluctance to do that. Not easy, and particularly with the new administration, we'll have to see how that plays out. But that is a role that Heritage is going to try to play, is bringing people together, talking, dialoguing, and having people agree on certain basic principles. And number one about them is our limited constitutional government. We have to start with that, Jennifer. We have to. Can't abandon that.
Well, I just I so appreciate your points. And I think that, you know, this notion that we are under attack, and I you know, listen, if you were a Trump supporter, if you said so, you know, you got blasted like I did on that ugly note, or you got your car gets keyed, God forbid, you have a Trump sticker and you drive through DC and park, you know, this idea that we can't speak up. So how do we bring voices, differing points of view together, like Paul said, and have empathy and compassion, and you're suggesting in a civilized dialogue, when they make it personal and attack us personally?
It's not easy, Jennifer, and I concede that, and that is not something that's going to happen overnight. But what is our alternative? You know, we can't continue to have, you know, riots and these kinds of violations of the rule of law in our country. We just can't have it. And so we have to look to our leaders, some in office, some out of office, who will be able to play that role of bringing people together. They're out there. I really believe they're out there. And I think, of course, of my favorite president, Ronald Reagan, all the wonderful things that he was able to do. And much of that was based upon his idea of listening and talking to people. So perhaps that's one model that we should consider as we move forward.
Well, and I think part of when I think about President Trump, and he brought the black leaders together, and he said, what do you need? How can we help you in the urban cities? He did just that. And when the black community shifted and started really supporting this president because they saw him being interested in what their needs were, you know, then I have a quote I just saw from Maxine Waters that she would not forgive the blacks who voted for Trump from her district. So this alienation, and it's, you know, it's become, it's no longer about parties for me. It's really about patriot or not patriot, choose. But
yes, well, you're right. And I think that it cannot be just one conversation. There has to be a conversation after conversation, meeting after meeting, listening patiently, finding that person out there and then encouraging him to come forward, working with him, and so forth. This is, as I say, it's not going to be easy, and it can't be done overnight. But what is our alternative? We cannot continue to have the kind of, demonstrations and which then erupt into violence, whether it's out in the capital or whether it's some other city of ours. It just cannot be allowed to happen, to keep on happening.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your insights. And are there any final thoughts that you have? I want to thank Heritage Foundation, and please, you guys, go out and support them. Raising money for our cause is important. Support Heritage Foundation at heritage.org. We truly appreciate them, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity here at WFMD to have conversations like this to help us move forward. I also think it's very important, back to what you're saying, Dr. Edwards, that we seek out alternative forms of communication, because we cannot trust the mainstream media right now to be available for all people. They only want to control the dialogue in their point of view. And so please go to Parler. You can find me on Parler and Gab now. Jennifer, Charlton, we're just getting those up and rolling. I'll be on Rumble. We'll have some of our podcasts over there. And Facebook and Twitter, well, I may be coming off of Facebook on the 15th. I'm suggesting everybody consider shutting down your Facebook. Deactivate it. Just deactivate it on the 15th. And when you do, if we do a mass exodus, it will massively affect their economics. And there will be a time where they will have a reckoning as to whether or not they can continue to abuse our rights of freedom of speech as a major platform in communications in our country. So I myself am deactivating on January 15th from Facebook. So you will not find me there for a while, maybe forever. You can also find me on charltoncommunications.com. We've changed our website. It now will be charltoncommunications.com. But that being said, it's important for us to stand up for our rights, for freedom of speech, freedom to assemble, and the freedom to do so peacefully without people coming in and trying to co-opt our messaging and our media and our opportunity to speak forward. Is there anything else you'd like to say? We're coming up on the end of the show.
Well, I just say this, Jennifer, that what you're doing with your program and with your standing up for principle like this is terribly important and can serve to inspire others. Let me just leave this thought with regard to communism, that people ask me, well, can you sum it up in just a couple of words? And I would say communism is a pseudo-religion posing as a pseudo-science enforced by political elites.
Wow. I love
and,
that.
And think about that and reflect upon that. And that's sort of a way I have of trying to summarize what communism is all about. It is the God that failed.
That's amazing. And when you think about communism, back to how we started the show with Paul, and that we are a country that is founded in the principles of faith and a relationship with God, however you might characterize that. And
as you know, Karl Marx said that religion is the opium of the people. So that's their number one target, along with the abolition of private property. Those two things, get rid of private property and get rid of religion, and that is the paradise, that's the utopia which communists would like to create.
I want to say that I just heard yesterday, back to we are already there, Twitter shut down 300 pastors. There is no accidente, as they say. And here we are in what you just shared. Communism has no view. It has no room for faith, because faith is bigger than them, and they can't have that.
Exactly. It's the enemy number one so far as the communists are concerned.
Wow. And, you think about Christians being persecuted. You think about Jews who have been persecuted. You think about people of faith who have been persecuted by those who cannot tolerate faith. So we need to redirect our attention to our founding principles of faith and hope and truth and integrity. And I just thank you so much. God bless you, Dr. Edwards.
Thank you, Jennifer. Couldn't put it any better myself. Thank you. God bless you.
God bless you. Okay. Well, thank you, everybody, for a fabulous weekend. Have a great week. We'll see you next Saturday morning, 9 a.m.